Welcome to the SpinAxis podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
And I'm Tyson Deskins. Be sure to subscribe and pass along to your golf buddies.
Yep. Give us a rating too if you have a chance in whatever podcast listener, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast. We are back with a mailbag episode. We have some questions we pulled forward from the last time. Some are new. We'll start with an easy one from Jeffrey via email. What is the P system? Can you describe the P system?
I would say, first off, if you Google that, if you chat GPT that, you're going to find a lot of different, you know, a lot of descriptions. I shouldn't say different, but a lot of description of what the P system is. But Jason, how would you describe that really quick?
Yeah, it's basically just the positions in the swing. So for Veraculum, it's like P1 is your address, P2 is club or shaft parallel into the backswing, and then they just sort of tick through in space and time. So it's a good way of just being like referencing a position in the swing, lead arm parallel, top position, impact. Those are all a part of the P system. It just sort of breaks it down into, is it 10 of them?
But nobody really cares about 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah.
You kind of stopped counting after 7.
Right.
P1 is set up. P2 is shaft parallel. P3 is lead arm parallel in the backswing. P4 is the top. Then they reverse. P5 is lead arm parallel in the downswing. P6 is shaft parallel in the downswing. P7 is impact. P8 and 9 and 10 you can figure out, but we almost never talk about them. It's basically shorthand, so instructors can say to themselves or each other or students that know, oh, go to P2 instead of go to the place where the shaft is roughly horizontal to the, you know, it's just shorthand. That's all it is. It's just shorthand. Vishal, my friend, asked me, sent me a text, what is the most counterintuitive thing about the golf swing that beginners cannot grasp without the help of a coach or instructor?
That's a great question.
We kind of did this in a recent episode about the most difficult things.
So many opposites. Yeah, gosh.
What's the most counterintuitive thing?
I'll sort of say this one. I think one of the things that I find a lot of new golfers and experienced golfers as well, but I think it's hard for people to understand that golfers swing the club head in a direction while the club face might not be actually looking in that same direction. That is a counterintuitive thing to a lot of people. I think we could list probably 100 others, but I find that one. Jason, do you have anything that you would say that is counterintuitive?
Oh, man. I mean, which way the hands go, like the force onto the handle. This is a lot. It depends on the student. I see a lot of kids and new golfers struggle with trying to get the ball in the air because the concept of how to get the ball in the air is backwards. You know, we want the loft of the club and spin loft to get the ball in the air versus like scooping it, hanging back, trying to actually lift the ball in the air can be a hard one.
You mean they don't get under it?
Yeah.
Right? You hear that all the time. I need to get under it more, right?
Yeah. My answer for this would probably be that kind of the arm swing illusion stuff where everyone, you see a beginner at the range, they know the club goes from here to above their head. So they just take their arms and they put it there and they don't really turn. They just use their arms to put the club there and then they chop down on the ball because they haven't really used their body. So the counterintuitive thing to me is how you use your body, how much you use your body, and how comparatively little you use your arms especially in the backswing, to move the club back. It's a mostly rotation and a little bit of hinge and a little bit of trail arm folding, and that's it. So that would be my answer off the cuff. We didn't give this 10 days of thought, you know, but
it's a good one though.
That's our answer off the cuff. Yeah. Daniel emailed to say, in controlled environments, so indoors, probably on a mat, on a launch monitor with straight lines everywhere, he hits draw after draw after draw. 84 miles an hour swing, 160-yard carry, 50-degree descent angle, et cetera, et cetera. On the course, he's about half a club shorter with a little fade. So he draws it indoors on a mat in a controlled environment with lines everywhere. He said, I imagine there's some visual trickery with alignment in my brain is self-organizing to get it back on target, but it seems to fall into the big movement camp because he rotates around what he feels is square. Why is that happening? What would be your guess? Daniel hits draws indoors and fades outside.
I would say this. I think it's way easier to aim yourself when you're 10 feet away from a target with those straight lines.
The straight lines on the mat are big.
The straight lines on the mat are big for players, right? And then you get outside and a fairway is cut going in one direction. The hole is sort of pointed in the other direction, you're 400 yards away, 180, 200 yards away. Now your ability to aim gets worse. So you're probably aiming farther left than you think you are outside, obviously, than you are inside. Creates different geometry, physics, and that's why you get the ball flight. That's where I would guess.
I'm going to go with inside. I think he hits it a little heavy, and that tightens his spin loft, and so that's why the ball goes a little further inside. And then outside, he swings a little harder, and then that creates a little bit more left path. Probably opens the face a bit because he doesn't close it as he's, you know, squaring it up inside. That would be the amount of times that students, you know, they go from inside to outside and they're like, I'm hitting it shorter, which is always funny because most people are like inside and they're like, oh, I hit my 7-iron further than this. I'm like, I've only heard you hit one solid yet. And that one didn't even carry that number. I don't think you carry that outside.
So, yeah. So we're saying alignment.
Yeah.
And we're saying the conditions of the mat, because oftentimes when you're on dirt, people are afraid to hit the ground a little bit more because they know they can't get away with it as much. So all kinds of stuff changes. A lot of things change. They flip a little bit more. They do some other things a little bit more. So the path might rotate a little bit left. That's a little bit of what you're saying, Jason. Is that
correct? Yeah, exactly.
Summary. Okay. This episode is presented by Swing Coach, golf's most advanced AI training app and the fastest growing golf app on the planet. Simply set up your phone and swing. Swing Coach instantly analyzes your motion and gives you clear, voice-based feedback on the key fundamentals, swing plane, hand path, early extension, and more. No sensors, no waiting, just precise, tour-level insight after every swing. Practice with a purpose. Train like the best. Swing Coach, it's like having a world-class instructor in your pocket. Download the app today and experience the future of golf coaching. Use the link in the show notes and you get 2 weeks for free. Brian via Twitter/X. I tend to play my best golf at my home course. I really struggle to score well on unfamiliar tracks. Should I keep focusing on shooting the lowest score possible at home or start building on-course challenges to make things harder and simulate pressure? What strategies can actually help when playing away from home? Plays well at home. Familiarity is important. Doesn't play well when he plays new courses. I know some people that actually play really well the first time they play a new course. They don't have some built in, oh God, I hit it left here the last three times I played this hole. You know, they don't have that built in, but that's rare. Most people don't score as well when they play an away course the first time.
Yeah.
So what can he do?
First thing should be shot patterning your dispersions, finding out where you should be missing, picking smart targets. That's first off. Like whenever I go to play,
subconsciously hit to the safer spots at home.
Probably, right? You know where the bad misses are. That's what I would instantly go into that. That's you know the rough's a little thinner over there, and you know that you can't be in the trees on that side. Versus you go to another golf course and you hit it over a hill, and there's a bunker there. You're like, oh man, I shouldn't hit it over there. I should hit it over there. Well, just do a little bit of homework, you know, and you can even do it on the tee too, right? If you have your phone with you, just quickly open it up, throw your shot pattern on this hole. Where do I need to aim to make sure I'm in a good spot? That would, you know, first things first, that. And then outside that, yeah, I mean, the green speeds are going to be different. The undulations on the greens, you're not going to maybe hit it, okay, the pin's on the right, but you can't be right of that flag because it's a false front and rolls off the back. The amount of golf courses that I've played where you don't have a pin sheet or a green map, and you hit a half decent golf shot, but then it, you know, bounces off a downhill lie, rolls off the green into thick rough behind that. Not much you can do about that.
Yeah. And I would sort of to answer his question, I think it depends on what you're looking for. Some people are absolutely fine just playing their home course as well as they can play their home course. If you want to be able to play your best when you do travel to other courses, then yeah, you got to play other courses much more often, right? They're going to have different green complexes, like Jason was just talking about, different grasses, you know, different sort of soil as your club interacts with the ground. So to sort of simulate that on your home course, I think is difficult. And I think that's why, you know, the PGA Tour guys, I know I heard David Orr talk about this. Why are they such good putters? They show up to a course on Monday that has a certain practice putting green, and it's got 18 different holes, and they show up the following Monday to a new course with a new putting green with new undulation, new grass, and 18 new holes. And they do that every week. So you want to get really good at it, you got to do that a lot.
Yeah. And even this one of my pet peeves, when you go to like your club championship at your own course. So you play the entire season, and then you show up Friday and they've double cut and double rolled the greens. Voila, you've got a brand new golf course in front of you. Every green read that you've had for the entire season or five seasons of that is now completely different because now the speed's amped up 3 on the stint meter. Why? That drives me crazy. Like, just play the course like it's always played.
Understanding your game, understanding game planning is important. When you play your home course a lot, I find that you kind of understand how to play it. You can kind of play it without having to think about it. You're not saying, oh, okay, missing left here is bad. I need to play for the right half of this green and so on. You just kind of do it without having to think about it. And when you go to a new course, you don't take the time to assess, over there looks bad. Let me shade toward this side. Okay, how far is it to the corner of that dogleg? A lot of times you show up to a new course and you see a dogleg and it looks like, oh, my driver fits in there. And then you hit driver and you just hit it into the far trees. You hit it through the dogleg because you were too lazy to like laser the far trees and see.
Great story for that. So I played in a competition event at a course like about 2 hours from Winnipeg. So I drove up there and obviously my bad, I forgot my rangefinder. And I get out there and I'm playing with these couple of guys and one of them's a local. This is his home course. And we get to the, I think it's the third hole, and it's a big elevated tee box, par 5 down the hill. And I'm standing there and I look out. I'm like, how far do you think the trees are through the fairway? He goes, it's 280 through the fairway on that line. I'm like, okay, I can hit 3-wood then. Like my 3-wood, it's not going to carry that. You know, it goes like 260, right? And this is, you know, a couple years back. Anyways, I hit it. And I didn't even hit it overly well. And it flew directly into the trees. And I just look over at him. And he's like, ooh, you hit that really well. I'm like, no, I didn't hit that real good. And so the other guy just stops, turns around, walks back to his bag, gets his rangefinder, zaps it. It's 250. I'm like, great. Thank you very much for that information.
Got
it. So take the time to do the things that you take for granted at your home course. At your home course, you know you can't reach that tree or you can't reach that stream on that cuts across the hole on that par 4 or things like that. You know that this hole looks uphill, but it doesn't really play uphill. You know those things at your home course. You do not know those things at a new course. Take the time to look at them. Look at the hole, look at the yardage book, whatever can help you figure out like, okay, it looks like I don't want to go there. What's the distance to this? How wide is this? Is that an optical illusion? Oh, that bunker is 20 yards short of the green. Oh, that gets a lot of people, right? You learn that on your home course, but it looks like if I carry that bunker, I'm on the green. Oh, nope, I'm still 15 yards short. Well, Donald Ross got you again or whoever,
yeah,
right? So be careful of that stuff. Our next question is Scott via email. What is the best way to practice the short game shots if you don't have a green available to practice?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I would go with, you know, you can practice hitting shots to a towel that's on the ground. And what I would say is just practice the trajectory and the carry distance.
Yeah.
The hard part, if you don't have a green, is how is the ball going to react once it hits a green? But you can at least practice high, medium, low, and carrying it 10 yards and like hitting your spot.
And what the lie looks like.
Yeah, 100%.
And how the lie reacts. If you have a yard, when I was a kid, we had fruit trees, you know, peaches and pears and apples and plums and stuff. And I would play par 3s and stuff over my patio to that pear tree. And I had to hit the trunk of the pear tree or land it in the little circle, you know, land it in it. And some lies were bad and some lies were good because I would just plop the ball down in my yard. If we didn't mow for a couple days and it was longer, that lie was worse. So you just learn how to deal with that. You learn how to hit it high enough to go over the patio, which was brick, so it wasn't too bad if I mishit it slightly. Go over the patio, but not go so high the ball didn't go anywhere or required a massive swing that if it bladed it was 3 houses down. You can still practice, like you said, trajectory and carry yardages from all kinds of lies, not maybe fairway lies, but all kinds of lies out of the rough. Jason, what do you do?
Yeah, I like that. I have turf in my whole backyard. So I just get to practice off really tight mown. But I mean, yeah, if you have a standard backyard, some of the cool games I've seen, they have like almost like beer pong, but with Home Depot buckets. Yeah. That'd be a great game to play. Absolutely. I mean, you got to control your trajectory and carry and have some wobbly pops with your friends.
It's yeah. And combo. If you can go to a indoor facility, you can just chip off the mat too. You can just chip off the fairway that's on the mat. You don't need an actual green necessarily. My facility has a putting green that reacts very much like a regular outdoor green, but you can just chip off a mat out onto the range. Like there's no problem with that. You can maybe pick a ball out there that I want to chip it so it lands at that ball or rolls out to that ball. Mm. You can do that kind of stuff too.
Love it.
Okay. Yeah. Austin via, I'm going to call it Twitter. Why do a lot of instructors or instructional things promote playing a draw rather than a fade? So quickly, what's your answer to that?
First things first is predominantly golfers don't know how to do that. And it's not that I want every single one of my students to hit a draw, but one is you should know how to hit it. And two, it also teaches you how to like control the club face and dynamic loft at the same time. The main reason that amateurs hit their draw further than a fade is because they de-loft the face to hit that shot. Mm-hmm. Guys on the PGA Tour hit their fade just as far as they hit their draw because they're controlling the dynamic loft and spin loft at impact.
Yep. Tyson?
I mean, because 99% of golfers who come in for their first lesson are slicers. So we try to teach them how to hook it ultimately so they then can decide that they want to hit a fade or a draw. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and even Lee Trevino or Jack Nicklaus did not hit pull fades. They hit push fades.
Yeah.
So a push fade is closer to a draw than a average golfer power fade, quote unquote.
I mean, one of my favorite videos is Lee Trevino aiming two fairways over. And his, if we go into the B systems, is yeah. At P6, his club head is behind his butt with his driver. That is
yep.
Bonkers shallow. And then he hits it two fairways over, down the correct fairway, mind you, yep. But two fairways over from where he's aimed.
Yeah. Yes asks via email, how do you know when to stop making swing changes? Is there a point where you have a good swing and you work on maintaining the swing you have? I think we answered that with our last podcast almost. Work on your swing changes over the winter, over your off season, and then play golf all summer.
Yeah.
But what's your answer?
That's a great question. Everyone is working on a couple of things because most people have a tendency and you're always trying to work away from that tendency. Now there's obviously bigger motor patterns that you don't want to see, but then once that is not solidified, but in a great spot, it's just maintaining it and then building skill into that pattern. So if you watch your swing and 99% of it's great, okay, maybe you've got one or two drills that you do once a week to make sure it doesn't go back the other way. And then it's just enjoying it, skill games on the range, and play as much golf as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you hit the middle of the face every time, you control where your face is looking every time, so your ball flight is what you want. That's the point when you're just trying to now maintain, keep beefing up your skill, and go play the game.
Yeah, you still keep in mind what you were working on, because right. If you stop paying attention to it, it's going to slide back. You still keep it in mind. You check on it. Maybe you hit your first 15 balls every day, kind of working on that same thing, but then just play golf and do some skills work. Last question of the night. Patrick Harrington said to square the face using your hands, right? Educated hands, etc. But all the videos on YouTube say rotate, hold the face square throughout the swing. What's the proper way to square the face? I think we can all agree there's no holding the face square. The face is open and then closed throughout the thing, and you got to time that correctly. They're still timing the golf swing. Agreed?
Agreed.
Yes.
How do you square the face? There's a bunch of things. Your body doesn't square the face. Rotation is an opener. Rotation tends to open the face.
Absolutely.
So of your body. My videos don't say to just turn to square the face and hold the face square. I don't know that yours do.
Matt, yeah, it's closure rate.
Yeah.
Is closure rate the same from golfer to golfer? No, they're wildly different.
Right.
They're all amazing golfers. One's 3,000, one's 5,000, you know, but they're all on the PGA Tour. There's nobody. Yeah,
and there's no correlation between accuracy and distance and closure rates being high or low or anything like that. So it is what it is. There's a bunch of different ways. That's unfortunately 7 episodes of the podcast, that question. So we can't answer it really, but your hands are critically important at squaring the face, delivering the right amount of loft, all that stuff. Your hands are important. You can't just turn and hold. There's no such thing. Maybe on a chip shot.
It's the only thing attached to the club. So yeah. Yes, get them educated.
Yeah, it's a steering wheel. It's going to do a lot of work for it. So
that's a great episode. I would just encourage golfers to keep sending us your questions. If we didn't answer a question that you have, send them in. Jason, where could they send them to?
You can find us online at thespinaccess.com and then always on social medias at thespinaccess.
Thanks.